I think because I'm a child of immigrants, growing up, when we went to restaurants, I didn't really have the enjoyment or luxury of several courses. Right? We didn't have appetizers. We went straight to the main course and had water for a drink. You can understand, right? A lot of you. So whenever we go to a buffet, it's like a real treat to me because I wasn't used to all that. So when we go to a buffet, I don't know about you, but I have a certain sequence. I have a method, right? So first course, it's very important. It's kind of light, right? I don't want to pack it up too much. I get a few things that I really like, but that's light. And the whole purpose, it's to get me, whet the appetite. It's to get me into the vibe, right? It's to get me into the mood. I have the first course. I'm like, this is good. I'm starting to feel it now, right? So that the next time I go up, that's when it starts, right? The main courses. That's when the proteins come out. The meats, the good stuff, right? That's the purpose, ultimately. If you don't have the main course, what's the point? But, I mean, you got to really enjoy the main course, too. Today's passage that we read is the end of chapter 1. So Gospel of Luke, I mean, who is the main character? The main character is Jesus Christ himself. Jesus is the main course of Luke. But all of chapter 1 takes place before the birth of Jesus. So chapter 1 is the great appetizer. It sets up the stage for the main course of Jesus. And today's passage is the very last chunk of chapter 1. And it's often known as the Benedictus, or it's the prophecy of Zechariah. So chapter 1, the first character that Luke introduces is Zechariah, and the chapter ends with this prophecy of Zechariah. So the story of Zechariah is a very important part of this appetizer, of this setup for the main course of Jesus. So it's very important to reflect on the story of Zechariah. This is how Luke begins the story of Zechariah and his wife Elizabeth. In the days of King Herod of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah who belonged to the priestly order of Abijah. His wife was descended from the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. Both of them were righteous before God, living blamelessly according to all the commandments and regulations of the Lord. This is a very important beginning. Zechariah and Elizabeth, they were descended from Aaron. Now, to go back in history, Aaron was the brother of Moses. Moses was that great leader who led the Israelites out of slavery in Egypt. But for those who may recall, when Moses was being called, he was like, but I can't even speak. How am I going to lead these people? So God said, your brother Aaron can be your spokesperson. So Aaron was like Moses' right-hand man. He was his spokesperson. And then when they were going to leave the wilderness, God said to Aaron, your descendants will be the priestly line. They will be the ones to safeguard the covenant, the rituals in which the people are connected to God. So the priestly line were very important. And what Luke is saying is that this priestly line, it survived. It survived centuries. They survived when they went from the wilderness settling into the promised land. It wasn't an easy settlement. They had to fight many battles and wars, but that line survived. They survived the era of judges when they were just a loose confederation of tribes and occasionally a military leader would rise up to guide them through. They survived through that. Then they survived through the era of the monarchs, the kings. They survived the kingdom being divided. And then they survived even the greatest tragedy until then, the conquest by Babylon and deportation and exile in Babylon. Even in a foreign land, this line survived. And then they survived when they returned back to their former homeland and reestablished themselves only to be conquered again by all these big foreign powers, the Greeks, and then ultimately now the Romans. This line survived. Luke is making this very clear. In other words, God has been faithful to them by preserving this priestly line that maintains a connection between the people and God. But there's an issue right away. And Luke introduces this issue right after that verse. But they had no children because Elizabeth was barren and both were getting on in years. For those of us who have been in our Bible studies now, this is a very familiar theme now. This is what began the story of Abraham and Sarah, and this is what begins the whole story now of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Zechariah and Elizabeth had no children. What does that mean? This whole line that survived all these eras and centuries, it's at a standstill now. It's coming to an end. With no children, there is no future. Everything was in jeopardy. Everything was in doubt. And in this context, God sent an angel to Zechariah and made this promise to him. Do not be afraid, Zechariah, for your prayer has been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you will name him John. You will have joy and gladness, and many will rejoice at his birth, for he will be great in the sight of the Lord. That's a great promise. But the angel didn't stop there. He went on to make an even more extraordinary promise. Even before his birth, he will be filled with the Holy Spirit. He will turn many of the people of Israel to the Lord their God. With the spirit and power of Elijah, he will go before him to turn the hearts of parents to their children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. A great promise was given to Zechariah in the midst of this very barren situation. This too has parallels with the story of Abraham and Sarah. In their barren situation, God gave a great promise to Abraham. But there is one major difference. Abraham responded to the promise. He obeyed God and went. In Luke, Zechariah becomes silent. And this is how Luke describes it. When he did come out of the temple, he was unable to speak to them, and they realized that he had seen a vision in the sanctuary. He kept motioning to them and remained unable to speak. We see that Zechariah is unable to speak. And I realized this is a very important part of the story. So much that I was considering an alternate title for the sermon, and that would be Zechariah's Silence. When the angel gave the promise to Zechariah that he would have a son, this was his response to the angel. How can I know that this will happen? For I am an old man, and my wife is getting on in years. And the angel responded to Zechariah in this way. I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and to bring you this good news. But now, because you did not believe my words, which will be fulfilled in their time, you will become mute, unable to speak until the day these things occur. I mean, I read this story many times growing up, and a lot of scholars would also say, yes, Zechariah's muteness, it's punishment for his disbelief, just to show that he should have obeyed. There is that, but I think there's a lot more to this silence. You see, when the promise was given to Zechariah, it's almost like the angel brought to the surface the big issue, the big pain that he had been living with for so long. There was a gap between what he really wanted and the facts that he had been living with for so long. He said the facts very clearly. I am an old man and my wife is getting on in years. This is irrefutable biology. These are the facts. And you are saying something pretty much very ridiculous, that I will have a son. And that gap was brought to the surface. And that gap is so painful. The gap between what we really want and our present reality sometimes seems like an enormous chasm. You know, Zechariah and Elizabeth, they're described as very faithful. I'm sure when they were younger, I'm sure they trusted in God completely. While God has been so faithful to us up until now, our ancestors all the way to now, surely God will continue to be faithful. That was their faith going in. And as they tried and weren't bearing a child, they began to pray, I'm sure, because the angel said, your prayers have been answered. But I think these were prayers of their younger years. At first, they were praying fervently. Oh God, you know our heart. Grant us our wish. Grant us our desire. This is your will, isn't it, God? May we have this child. But time continued to tick on and nothing happened. And over time, I think what happened was, as this gap between what they wanted and their situation, as that gap continued to widen, hope began to dissipate. They began to lose hope. And ultimately, that hope kind of disappeared and led to resignation. You see, there's pain in the gap between what we want and our present situation. There is real pain there. But as that gap widens and hope starts to be lost, that pain becomes a silent pain. And so Zechariah, I think he was carrying this silent pain in his heart. Unspoken pain. Hopeless pain resigns you to present reality. And it silences the heart. I wonder, how many of us live life like this today? I wonder how many of us come to the belief that this, what I have now, this is as good as it gets. I might as well just make the best of what it is today. And certainly, we try to do our best with what it is. Zechariah and Elizabeth, they remained faithful. They were righteous. They were blameless. They continued to follow the law. I mean, I give such credit to them. But underneath that, they were devoid of joy. Their hearts were empty. Zechariah remained silent until the end of the chapter, until the passage that we read today. But that's not it in chapter 1. There's a lot of things that happen between Zechariah's silence and when he regains his voice. First of all, Elizabeth did conceive. And then Elizabeth's relative Mary, the angel appeared to her as well and gave her an even greater promise that to you will be born the Savior of this world. And the angel then told Mary that your relative Elizabeth is also pregnant. So Mary rushed over to Elizabeth. And when Mary got there, the baby in Elizabeth's womb leaped for joy. And then Elizabeth gave birth. They named their son John. And finally, Zechariah regained his voice after he had witnessed all that God had done. Luke has a very profound message here. Zechariah represents us, I believe. We can become silent in our hopelessness, being resigned to the gap between what it is we really want and our present reality. But while we are silent in our hopeless gap, God is on the move. God is at work. God is preparing the ground for something else. This is Luke's point. Has that been your experience in life? It certainly has for me. Thinking back in the day, you know, to become a lawyer, you have to go to law school, and then you have to spend a 10-month period called articling. So it's basically like low-paid labor at a law firm or something like that. But you're learning the ropes, and then after that, you can get licensed as a lawyer. Until that point, I was living a pretty charmed life, I would say. Undergraduate, a really good job at a good company, law school. You know, in law school, like, you know, all the pressure, you gotta get a good corporate law job at one of the Bay Street downtown law firms. So I ended up doing that too. Got my summer job and then got hired back for articling. And so I was living a charmed life. But underneath the surface, I was walking a very tenuous tightrope. Because on the one hand, I was doing what I felt I needed to do, that's respectable, that would, you know, gain me at least respect and reputation. But on the other hand, I knew what I loved. I loved being involved with people, helping community, things like that. And so I was always trying to juggle and balance. So on the surface it was going well, but it's walking a great, great tightrope. And it came to a head in my articling year. You know, when you're articling, for a downtown law firm, that's gotta be your life. Cause your goal is you gotta get hired back. Because only when you get hired back and serve at least a few years as an associate, then you have options in life, right? You got places to go. But if you don't get hired back, that's going to be kind of it. And so I knew in my head what I should do, but my heart was pulling me to this other real opportunity I had to do something with community. So I did that, and it affected my work, and it showed. I don't know if I've ever shared this story. And yes, I was the only one in my articling class not to get hired back. First major setback like this in my life. And at first, I was kind of relieved because I knew I didn't really want to do this. So I was very relieved. But that lasts maybe a few weeks and a month. And time goes on and I'm like, uh-oh, my bank account's getting low. Oh no, what? I got to apply for employment insurance. The first time ever I'm doing this. So I'm receiving government money and starting to reach out, apply to a few places, hearing nothing back. The weeks and months start going back, and then darkness hit. I'm losing all sense of any direction or hope. I mean, this is all I've done my whole life, but I don't want to do this, but I don't know where else to go. And even this, only doing articling, you're not marketable. I don't have enough. So everywhere I'm hearing silence, no response, and that's it. Months go by, so 6, 7, 8 months, darkness and silence. See, when I look back now, reflecting, the reason I haven't really reflected much is there's nothing to reflect on. You know, they have stories. Oh, you know, in my time of adversity, that's a time for you to learn about yourself and grow. If I'm honest, none of that happened. I learned nothing about myself. I didn't grow. Or, you know, some people, that taught me my resolve and grit. I didn't have grit. I didn't have resolve. It was just silence. Despair. I was literally in sharing an apartment with my brother, lying on a mattress in my room watching the TV show Lost. So I was truly lost. That's how I spent my days. I was feeling so pathetic, right? It was tough. How did I get out of it? It's so random. You know, at the firm I articled at, there was this one partner. I worked on one file with her, nothing major even. Just did one little thing for her, and that was it. But somehow, she took notice of me. And when she found out I wasn't hired back, she called me into her office and said, "Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. You know, let's keep in touch. If there's anything I can do to help, let me know." And I was like, okay. I was surprised. I didn't really do much with her. So then over the months, I started to get desperate. So I did reach out to her and kind of like getting advice and leads and whatnot. And then fast forward 8 months into my unemployment and darkness, I get a call from her. "Hey, there's this like small little boutique securities law firm. You interested in a job?" I'm like, "Yes, please." Right? And she hooked me up with a job. So random. She didn't owe me anything. She barely knew me. And somehow she helped me. That's how I got out. I mean, that began another rocky journey, but at least it got my feet moving again. Well, when I look back, it's very mysterious how things happen. I can't but help but attribute these little things to the movements of God in my life. When I was silently in despair, nothing happening, somehow God was at work planning my steps. That is how God works. God speaks. God moves when we are unable to speak. Zechariah was finally able to speak when he recognized God's faithfulness, even in his hopelessness. Today's passage in Luke 1, it's given to us by the lectionary for the Advent season. Advent means arrival or coming. The purpose of Advent and the purpose of Luke chapter 1 is to reawaken hope in us. That's the purpose of this appetizer. It's to stir up your heart and reawaken hope that has been lost or dormant. It awakens our hope and brings us back to expecting God to come and do something in our life. When the Israelites were in exile, they entered a deep period of darkness. Everything that had provided their sense of identity and security was gone, and they were lost in a foreign land. Without hope, without knowing where to turn to. But somehow, in the middle of that darkness, a voice pierced through in the night, the voice of the prophet Isaiah, and this is what he said. "Comfort, O comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and cry to her that she has served her term, that her penalty is paid, that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins." These are the opening lines to Handel's Messiah. "Comfort ye, comfort my people." These words of Isaiah, they stirred up hope once again in people's hearts and led them to once again look to God in that dark period of exile. When hope is stirred up, it changes the pain that has been silent into a pain that has a voice. It is a pain that's no longer just buried and underneath. It becomes a pain that cries out to God. A pain that calls out eagerly, awaiting God to do something. These are the final words of Zechariah and Luke chapter 1. "Because of the tender mercy of God, the dawn from on high will break upon us to shine upon those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the way of peace." It was after these words that Jesus, the Savior of the world, would be born. My friends, press these words into your heart. When you are feeling a loss of hope, when you feel hope slipping away, imprint these words on your heart. Hear the tender voice of God pierce through the night. And turn once again and wait for God to do something for you.